When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wow, man. Fellow adventurers, we are back with Sir Croakington. And in the previous two episodes, we got a clue as to where to find the part of the key we need to get deeper into Wackner's map. How are we going to go there? Adventures for this location, the emblazoned key, part one. Oh. Part one. How many parts are there going to be? The curse of Black Tor. They came upon you in the tangled dales south of High Meadow, tearing through the bracken. Yonness, the inescapable, nauseating stench of their rot filling the forest. Before you could even consider evasion, you're surrounded by a vast, foolish legion of undead. Well then, let us begin. You greeted the last several dawns from the relative comfort of your small room on the upper floor of the Red Wen. Sleep has not come easy. Your growing weariness, coupled with the gnawing sense of looming dread, has served to make you irritable and suspicious. It was less than a week ago you returned to High Meadow, having escaped from the wounds of Black Tor. With the information you managed to obtain from the dying goblin assassin Orgro, the location of the long hidden tunnels seared into your memory, you endeavoured to set out at once and tackle the next phase of your perilous mission. You could little have guessed just how perilous your mission was about to become. They came upon you in the tangled dales south of High Meadow, tearing through the bracken under the dazzling brilliance of the midday sun, the inescapable, nauseating stench of their rot filling the forest. Before you could even attempt to flee, you were surrounded by a vast, foolish legion of undead. It was the emblazoned silhouette that adorned the shields of a half dozen skeletal swordsmen that send your pulse racing. Alright, so this isn't just your random horde of the undead, because those happen sometimes, you know. The necromancer rises a lot of the undead. It gets killed by them, and the undead just wander around. That happens. Because quite a lot of necromancers are sort of incompetent. And they know how to raise the dead, but not how to, you know, control them or unwaze them after they're done with them. I mean, it's just polite, you know. Once you raise it, unwaze it. Otherwise, you're just causing problems. Black shape on the rusted, battered shields was unmistakable. It was silhouette of a robed, headless woman, a sinister symbol you immediately associated with a towering statue discovered deep in the shattered remains of Black Tor. As the undead horde, numbering perhaps 50, closed in on all sides, you couldn't strike from your mind the haunting notion that you yet to rid yourself of the ruined temple's ancient curse. Apparently this isn't whatever, it wasn't just the undead in that particular temple that were set off by this curse. Or maybe there was more undead hiding in some sort of deep catacombs and it took them a while to get out. Curse revealed you by Orgo as he lay dying. The battle in the dale proved a brutal contest from which you barely escaped with your life. And apparently it's just been skipped over. We don't have to actually fight them ourselves in, you know, battle. Bloodied and near to collapse. But having left 2 dozen of black doors dead, undead, returned to the grave by your hand, you at last managed to bolt through a break in the enemy lines and take flight back to Highmeadow. In the days immediately following your first confrontation with the undead horde, you twice more attempted to make the trek to the location revealed to you by Orgo. Each time, a little more than a mile outside Highmeadow, you were again ambushed by the undead. Alright, so it looks like these undead, they're not just chasing me any old place. Apparently they're just guarding particular places that were important either to the cult or the secret that they are hiding about the man somehow. Wary after the first encounter, you managed to flee both engagements before the ghoulish legion could ensnare you. Now, maybe I could just, you know, whittle them down. Kill a couple of dozen, retreat, but I have a suspicion that by the time I've did that, more of them would just be sent in to replace them. Realizing the undead seemed to take no interest in pursuing you out of the dales that surround the location of hidden tunnels, you ultimately returned to Highmeadow and decided to adopt a new strategy. It was then that you were approached by Wedwen's innkeeper and told a young woman had entered the inn looking for you. She told the innkeeper she would return in 2 days, and she insisted that he relate to you the urgency of her desire for a rendezvous. Intrigued by his account, certain the impending meeting would prove to be related to your ongoing mission, you made it known that you'll be needing your room, the inn, for the remainder of the week. Despite your keen interest in reaching the hidden tunnels, you were content to wait and see what light, if any, the mysterious young woman would be able to shed upon things. 2 days later, your wait came to an end. "That'll be her," says the innkeeper, staring out through one of the lopsided, half-rotted windows sent into the front of the ramshackle inn. "She's alone, if such a thing matters to you. She's at the table in the corner of the Wedwen's common room." You turn to face the door, just as the rickety slab creaks open. A young woman, attired in a mix of rugged leather and grey cloth, her golden hair tied into a single, lengthy braid, steps over the crooked threshold and shoots a glance at the departing innkeeper. A brown cape splashes over her narrow shoulders. You immediately recognise the woman you know as Emmett Haler. She turns and acknowledges you with a broad smile. Your mind momentarily wanders back to your last meeting with her at the Twisted Gate Alehouse in Mooksport. As Emmett Hale approaches, you begin to rise, preparing to initiate a shoulder cross. Before you're halfway to your feet, she slips into the chair opposite you. As she does, she peers back warily at the door. The pathetic barrier stands closed. She turns back to you, renewing her smile. "When we last parted, I said we might never meet again," she says. "As you can see, I've never been any good at getting those sort of things right here. Of course, anything else, take this. I think you'll appreciate its utility." With that, she reaches across the table and places a stone amulet in front of you. You pick up the amulet and carefully examine it, the hexagonal piece of stone dangling from a thin leather strap. Bears a single engraving on the smooth of its faces. Your pulse quickens as you suddenly realise the image carved in the amulet is a silhouette of a headless woman. "You aren't going to be able to escape the curse forever," says Emily Taylor. At her suggestion, she doesn't expect you to be surprised she knows of the dilemma you acquire during your excursion into Blackthor. You'll be thankful that it's Blackthor's curse that's fallen upon you, Sir Crokington. There are other far worse curses with which you might have found yourself afflicted. Wear the amulet, and Blackthor's vengeful dead won't seem quite so fearsome next time you cross paths with them. Okay, Blackthor amulet. Melee weighting of 1. It boosts your spirit by 2. It is unsurprisingly, it's magical. This hexagonal stone amulet bears an engraving of the smooth of its two faces that depicts a headless woman. The amulet was given to you by Emmett Taylor. She told you it would help protect you against the vengeful undead of Blackthor, the sinister product of a curse you unwittingly unleashed when you explored the ruined temple. Gripping the amulet in your right hand, you ask Emily Taylor several questions. It could have had it she knew of your trek into the ruined temple. Now she knows, and how much she knows about your continued descent into the labyrinth. You also ask her how she knew to find you in High Meadow, and what she knows of Blackthor and its sinister curse. I didn't discover all of it on my own, she said. I mean, we. That is, I'd hoped to play a lesser role in all this. Direct intervention was never our intention. When we learned you'd gone into Blackthor the Sorceress, however, a hand was forced. You see, Sir Crokington, there are very few of us left who still follow the paths laid out long ago. We still adhere to what has become a forgotten faith. We are here. We are not plentiful, and we are by no means powerful, but we are still here. So this is the headless lady faith, I guess. Although I guess that's just part of it. It's probably got all sorts of doctrines and secrets that I, of course, not being a member, I'm not going to be told. Emmett Taylor holds up her left hand, with her palm turned towards you. There, barely discernible in the centre of her hand, is the faint, tattooed silhouette of a headless woman. Surrounding the thin ink marking is the outline of a Takaba. I must first beg your forgiveness, Sir Crokington. Some of what I said at our last meeting was not the truth. There is a great deal more I choose not to say. You must understand, we need to be certain of your intentions, your motives, your allegiances. There's too much that has already been risked to allow us to carelessly reveal what we for so long endeavoured to keep hidden. Therefore, I seek your pardon, and if you allow me, I should like to reveal to you what you now must know. You listen with growing interest as Emily Taylor reveals some of what she has, until now, kept hidden. You learn that she and a small group, which she calls the surviving faithful, serve as the guardians of a faith long thought of and swallowed up by the fog of history. My entire line has walked upon the path which I still faithfully tread. My father, and his father before him, and his father's father, far back as I'm able to tell. My brother, Thrimback, was once among our fellowship. Well, as you know, he is of no particular importance for the moment. Because, yeah, I went and gave him the Dreadstones, and that broke his mind. Sorry about that, but with items like that, someone's gonna get broken. Sorry it was your brother, but someone was going to. At least it was someone who knew what I was in for. Well, as much as you can. So sorry about that, but you've probably heard enough people say you're sorry, so onwards and upwards and all that. Emmett Taylor tells you that the Fellowship, which no longer goes by any name, and no longer has an official leader, is spread far and wide across the North Broadlands. for its numbers have dwindled perilously over the last 2 centuries. You learn that it is a sworn duty of the Fellowship to guard an ancient secret, a secret once protected in fortress temples of the vanquished faith, temples like Black Tor. Before the undoing of our order, she says, before our enemies had the strength to wend the gates of our sanctuaries, before the defilers and the unbelievers, the will to stand against Our Lady, we were granted her gift of discovery. It is a gift we were woefully unprepared to receive. Perhaps it was a test, or perhaps a disguised admonishment, but it would prove our folly. Using the gift, our wisest elders discovered and unlocked an ancient magic, and by doing so, unwittingly garnered the cruel intention of an insidious, timeless terror. You learn that the elders of the Fellowship, faithful of an unnamed deity known only as the Headless Lady, discovered and unlocked an ancient, powerful form of Neville energy that has allowed its wielder the ability to open a magical gate. Well, that rarely ends well. A gate able to serve as a portal between the core of Swift and the very core of the Neverness. Almost immediately following its discovery, it was summarily decided that planar magic, which is apparently gating but on a whole other level, as it had become known by the elders, was far too dangerous an undertaking. All evidence of the potent magic was destroyed, and the gate that had been opened, a howling vortex that breached time and space to peer into the heart of the Neverness, was closed. Great harm had already been done. The roving eyes of a great beast, a creature whose only true form is the churning, unyielding essence of malevolence and chaos, had taken notice. Now, is this beast? What is this beast? Is this the sentient portal that's wandering Wackler's mad? Or is it the thing they portaled to? Ooh, it's a bit complicated. Before the elders could close the gate, it had been opened. Something terrible took notice of it, says Emily Taylor, quickly glancing towards the door. We know this scourge by its more familiar moniker, Woundskin. The entity is nothing more than a tattered remnant of a soul drawn from the very tides of chaos and ruin. The beast suffers no master, and, as you know well, its penchant for cruelty and the delight it takes in the misery wrought out of a design. Out of his design seems to know no bounds. Emmett Hayer turns and glances at the door. After a moment, she looks back to you and continues. The elders thought the gate had been closed. The danger had passed, he said. But the gate was still open. We had closed our side of the portal. But something had kept the other side open. Something had turned its gaze upon us. So it was there, experimenting and delving too deeply. That put our world on Woundskin's shit list. And which is a bad thing for pretty much everyone. And hopefully, in the future, for Woundskin himself. Startled by the revelations, you ask Emmett Hayer if the being known to you as Woundskin is the heart of the entire affair involving Wagner's Labyrinth. She nods and then continues. It was Wagner, she says, lowering her voice as she utters his name, whom the elders entrusted with the task of ridding the world of planar magic. The great sorcerer saw the danger his magic posed. It frightened him. Or so it has been said. But despite his best efforts and the full might of his legendary power, even he could do nothing to rid the world of that which had threatened to become his bane. Ever resourceful, said mad, Wagner endeavoured to hide the secret of planar magic from the gate that was born out of its discovery, in a place where no one, mortal or otherwise, would have any hope of finding it. You, Sir Crokington, are now closer to uncovering this long-kept secret than anyone has ever been. Emmett Haylett tells you that it was Woundskin that drove Wagner to create his infamous labyrinth, place which, for centuries remained little more than a whisper in the great annals of history. There, she said, from the deepest level of this magically constructed maze, Wagner, having abandoned everything else, use his sorcerous might to hide and seal off the gate which the elders had, in their greatest moment of folly, opened. Legends say, and they may well be right, that Wagner, seeking to acquire the power to allow him to battle, or even to slay Woundskin, entered the gate around which he built his deadly maze, he says. It is conceivable that Wagner acquired some unknown power, or perhaps mastered the very magic he had endeavoured to hide, and in doing so, became capable of thwarting the beast's advances into our world. Emmett Taylor pauses and glances over at the door, as though she's worried about something coming through. She quickly turns back to you. Before she can speak, you ask her, calling the Takaback outline tattooed on the palm of her hand, if Wagner was an adherent of the forgotten faith for which she has frequently alluded. He was one of our elders, she replies. I've no doubt that he found the labyrinth life rife of the symbols of our faith. The symbols that depict the path to be followed by those who have not forgotten Our Lady and her living promise. The eye, skull, the moon, the Takaback. They each possess their own meaning, and in combination reveal some of our guiding tenets. But it's a little concern to you. A little concern to anyone, really. Emmett Harley tells you that much is what's been written about Wagner, including the many familiar legends surrounding his tower in Fogmore. The curse he supposedly laid upon the forest, and the reasons behind the construction of his fabled labyrinth, are wildly departed from the truth. We've never sought to challenge the accounts found in the old histories and legends, he says. The inaccuracies and blatant falsehoods helped us maintain our secrets. Suddenly, her tone changes and she again lowers her voice, speaking in a harsh whisper. She pointedly asks you if you still possess the Dagger of Vanquishing, the wound-marked stones, and the wound-marked iron wing. Right. Dagger of Vanquishing, yep, here we go. Okay, I got that a long time ago. Well, by my perspective, maybe not so long from Sir Crokington's perspective, but we got that during the series of adventures when Woundskin was repeatedly menacing Hawkclaw and the surrounding area. It relieves me to "To know that you still do," she says. "They were difficult to obtain and trickier still to deliver to you. For our movements have been closely watched from afar. Two of our faithful, perhaps the closest we have known to elders in these, the final days of Our Lady, have seen to it that you are provided with what you need before the end of all of this. Eminent Hale inscribes to you the first of her brethren, to which she just alluded, and you immediately recall the young, green-caped woman you met in and around Hawklaw, the woman who delivered to you the dagger of vanquishing. The other is no longer in our fold, and his motives remain unclear to us," she says. "He did, however, bring to you the ring. For that, we can be grateful. Beyond that, I cannot say how his walk in all this will end. Yes, Sir Croakington, you know him as Lenoras."
Okay, so... Alright, so Lenoras has gone total turncoat. From the order whose whole point is to stop Runeskin to actively working with Runeskin. But of course, you know, once you've done one treachery, the next treachery is so much easier. They're like treacheries. They're like Ritz crackers, Pringles. You can't just have one. You're like, ooh, that was a tasty treachery, I'll have another. Ooh, that was a nice treachery, I'll have another. But then you end up betraying absolutely everybody. And everyone hates you and you end up stabbed. Yes, that's galore. So although we can use his perchant for treachery, you know, until we stab him too. Is that also treachery? I don't know. We never at any point implied told him we were on his side, so if he lets himself get stabbed, that's on him. Okay. Emmett Hale's admission takes you by surprise. You almost suspected she was about to reveal the sorcerer's name. You realise that her revelations, if they are all to be believed, go a long way to shedding much needed light on what has become an increasingly murky and dangerous affair. However, despite all that's been made plain, you remain uncertain about the part Coratel has played to this part, and the part which she will take going forward. He asks Emmett Hale about the sorceress, and she quickly denies there is any direct connection of which she is aware. Emmett Hale suggests that perhaps Coratel learned something of Glenoris' hidden designs while in Ashburn. She says that it is likely the sorceress is working on her own to thwart the Major's ambitions. For to what end, she does not know. Of course, it's kind of hard to know what was done by Coratel and what was done by Glenoris and what was done by Woundskin, because they can all use Otowak now. So if you see an Otowak walking around, you've no idea who sent it, or whether it's one of those really old Otowaks that's just there, wandering around because they're too stupid to know how to die. Realising you may have information of importance to aid her, you begin to give Amit her a brief account of your recent excursions into the maze. Which, scroll down, you'll find them. Including your encounters with Wackner's image in the dark and lonely lower passages. She abruptly holds up her hand. Signaling for you to abandon your narratives. "We have seen much through your eyes in that place," she says, again starting you with a blunt admission. Alright, well, have they somehow hacked the ring of greater warding, perhaps? Our Lady still sees fit to grant us the power of sight beyond all sight.
That's like
in the rhyme of Mozart. Precisely because we have seen what we have seen, we know time is near. We've seen what you've seen. We know time is nearly run out. There can be no further delay. We cannot for the moment worry about either the sorceress or Glenora, as she says, once more glancing back towards the door. There isn't time. You must find your way into the lower reaches of the labyrinth, Sir Crokington. But first, there lies immediately ahead of you a rather daunting task. Emmett Heyer tells you that you must immediately find your way to the location you've been attempting to reach, the hidden tunnel south of High Meadow. While she believes that she does not know what you'll find there, she believes, as you do, that the lair revealed to you by the goblin assassin Urgo is somehow connected to the unlocking of the labyrinth's deepest levels.
I didn't pass on this bit to them, or it was lost, or it moved, or something, or it was deliberately obscured. Who knows? It's possible we've already been beaten to those tunnels, she says, raising the fear that lingered at the back of your mind ever since departure from Blacktor. Hardly matters. We cannot concern ourselves with such scenarios. We must go and discover what must be done to secure the passage into the lowest depths of the mad. I will again meet you here upon your return. With any luck, I'll have found out more about the curse that you've... The door at the front of the inn groans as it slowly draws open. Three tall, broad-shouldered figures step into the wed. The leather-clad men, their gaunt, cheerless faces, largely cloaked in shadows cast by their wide-rimmed, weather-stained hat, promptly turn in your direction. Put on that
amulet and follow me out of here, okay?
Okay, she's deliberately said so. Time to put on that amulet. Blacktor amulet. That lowers my stats a lot, but I have way more stats than I need. With that, Emmett Haler rises and moves over to the door set into the black back wall of the common room. She pulls it open and slips out into an overgrown garden behind the door. Overgrown garden behind the inn. Doors barely close behind her when the heavy footfalls of the three men reach your ears. You turn and watch as a sinister trio makes its steady, purposeful advance. Okay. Do I confront them, or do I quickly follow Emmett Haler? I mean, she probably wants me to follow her, but I'm just curious. Confront the three men. You rise and confront the three men, but before you know what's happening, a powerful wave of fear washes over you. The sense of fear abruptly subsides. But in its wake, you suddenly decide it would be best to follow Emmett Hayes' lead and leave the inn. With the three men following at your heels, you turn and rush out through the back door. Okay, what are these men? Well, I have no idea, but considering Emmett Haler is running from them, they're probably tied to Woundskin or Glenoras or something like that. As you burst into the overgrown garden behind the inn, you nearly run into Emmett Haler. She retreats further into the tangled courtyard and draws out a carved wooden wand. She levels the device at the door just as the three men emerge from the inn. They're here for you, she snaps, moving to stand between you and the advancing trio. Get out of here. Get to where you have to go. Keep that amulet on. Go. I'll keep them here. Don't worry about me. Go. Before you can even react, Your gaze locks onto the three sinister figures moving across the garden towards you. A sudden and horrifying transformation comes over the three men. You watch with growing horror as the flesh melts off the faces of the three men, leaving behind only rotting chunks that cling to the cracked, decayed bones. The overpowering stench of death fills the small courtyard. Unfazed by their transformation, Emilia steps forward, brandishing a curved wand. "Go," she commands, flashing you an angry look. "Get out of here. We'll all come to ruin. Go." Okay, I think I'm... She clearly has way more about what's happening here than I do. So I should obey her. But at least I'm going to look up what happens if you don't. Okay, I've had a look. And it turns out if you... stand by her size, you just end up fighting a couple of skeletons. So it doesn't go terribly wrong, but she'd probably still be very disappointed in you. Anyway, heed her command and leave at once. Prompted by the dire urgency of her voice, you immediately heed Emilia's last command and turn and rush out of the garden. For it pains you to leave her. Something tells you the young woman is no stranger to peril. Well, considering who her brother is, she probably has some very, very good general badassery bloodline going on. As you pass out of High Meadow, heading south, a loud roar, like the roar of distant thunder, rises into the air from the direction of the inn. Your thoughts turn to Emmett Haler and the curved wand she was wielding. So it's probably like the wand of Dragonfire. Possibly. Again, something tells you, the young woman, a mysterious but trusted ally in its tangled affair, is no stranger to peril. You follow the winding road that makes its way through a large area of farmland just to the south of High Meadow. You abandon the road as it turns to the west and cut across the open countryside, moving through a region of bare hills and stunted patches of forest. The location you're seeking, as described to you a while ago, would be difficult to miss. The goblin assassin described four massive boulders, leading together to form a tower of stone, somewhere in the dales, south of High Meadow. According to what Orgol told you, at the top of the stone formation, you'll find the entrance to the long hidden tunnels. The task seems simple enough at its outset, but your first two attempts have already ended in failure. You estimate that on both occasions, you were still more than a mile from the location when you were set upon by a fearsome, seemingly endless horde of undead. Now armed with the amulet given to you by Emmett Haya, you find yourself in possession of a renewed sense of hope. You're determined to find and explore the hidden tunnels, eager to discover what
secrets they may guard.
You're less than a mile outside the village, heading south through a series of meadows divided by thin bands of forest, when you're suddenly startled by a cry for help from somewhere to the east. The cry repeats itself several times, and though you cannot clearly make out what's being said, the nearby scream appears to be that of a man pleading for help. With the echoes of the frantic cry ringing in your ears, your pulse begins to race. So, do I investigate them or not? Now, there's a fairly decent chance that this is some sort of trickery. But there's also, even if it's only a slim chance, that someone's in dire peril, probably from all these undead that I've got wandering around. Meaning it's not just a duty in a vaguely, there's someone I can help. And I'm there, so I should. It's more, they are in danger specifically because of me.
Well, anyway, divination shall give me some clues. Succeeded. You sense great evil in the direction of the cries. Okay, that really doesn't specify what's happening. I mean, it could be great evil, you know, that needs fighting right now, or just great evil that's not particularly doing anything greatly evil right now, but we'll do it later. No, I've got to investigate the cries. You move eastward, following the sound of the cries. After covering less than 200 yards, you happen upon a disturbing scene. A man, a woman, and three grown children. A man, a woman, and three grown children cower before a pair of ghouls. Hideous undead creatures advance upon the helpless family as their father, wielding only a stout wooden cudgel, desperately cries out for help. As you approach, the two ghouls turn and shriek at you. Your eyes are immediately drawn to the tabards that hang in tatters over their emancipated frames. Each of the filth-covered wags bears the insignia of Blacktor. So do I help, or do I flee? Divination, what do I do? You sense a powerful aura of evil surrounding everyone present, including the five humans, putting humans in quotation marks. No. There's still a chance. A chance I could be saving someone, so I have to give it a go. Remain where you are. As you rush forward, determined to place yourself between the cowering humans and their vile undead assailants. A foolish transformation comes over the five people. Yep, it's that trick again. The five humans turn towards you and stretch their open mouths. Their hands and faces rapidly melt away, leaving behind only the tattered strips of flesh clinging to their decaying bones. They too are the undead of Blacktor. Yes, I knew that would happen. Well, it was almost certainly going to happen. But I might have saved someone who needed it. So it was worth it. You know, I'm going to keep doing this. Because sometimes someone actually needs help. And you know what? Yeah, it's worth going into 100 ambushes. Just to save one person. You know, as long as you don't, you know, die, because then you can't save anyone, but that's not likely to happen. Moving with unnerving speed, the two ghouls rush forward and attack, waking at you with their jagged, blackened claws. Is the ghoul seeker one of two? The hideous ghoul claws at you. I swing my club. Alright, after this, I'm going to equip an anti-undead thing, which is slain. 25 XP. Before you even had time to reposition yourself, the second ghoul is upon you, tearing at your exposed flesh with his blackened stone-hard claws. I quickly draw chair with staff out of my belt. Yeah, I made it really tiny so it fit in the belt, but now I've got it out, it's closer to full size. Ghoul Seeker 1, 2 of 2. The hideous ghoul claws at you. Chair of staff makes them weaker, which is handy. A deathly chill passes through you as the undead foe drains away your life force. Hey, don't do that. I need that life force for living and stuff. It is slain. 25 XP. Five skeletons close in, stepping over the gruesome remains of the slain ghouls as they quickly surround you. Skeleton Hunter, 1 of 5. Hissing skeleton hacks at you with his rusted blade. Keep going, and slain. 25 XP. The skeleton collapses into a heap of shattered bone at your feet. The next skeleton, its decaying blade cutting a wide arc across its path. staggers forward and attacks. Another skeleton hunter. Hacks his rusted blade. Deadly chill passes through using undead foe. Drains away your life support for 9 damage. Okay, I'm going to quick combat the rest of these. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And slain. Skeleton collapses into a heap of shattered bone at your feet. The next skeleton. His decaying blade cutting a wide arc across his path. And staggers forward and attacks. Quick combat. Another 25 XP. From ultimate. Scattered bone at your feet. The last of the skeletons. Its rusted blade poised to deal you a cool blow. Fearlessly advances and attacks. Quick combat. Slain. 25 XP. And a bit of healing too. The skeleton collapses into a shattered heap of shattered bone at your feet. 128 experience to general. With the last of the skeletons heaped at your feet, you step back and pause to catch your breath. Well, that's 7 less skeletons that are going to cause problems. You know, unless, of course, the curse can knit them back together again. Because who knows, maybe it can do that too. After checking over your equipment and making certain no more of the undead are lurking nearby, you promptly set off on your way. Heading steadily south, you move into a rugged, wild country, riddled with thick swaths of forest, broad, boulder-strewn meadows, and deep, tangled vales, following the base path given to you by Orgo. You eventually arrive at the edge of a wild, densely forested ravine. According to what the goblin assassin told you, the location of the hidden tunnels is almost due south from here. 3 times you've attempted the direct route to the south, moving into the ravine, only to have a horde of dead come upon you in amongst the vales. Painful reminders of both of these horrific encounters lead you to think that the most direct route might not prove to be the safest. You realise by taking a slightly longer trek, heading first to the east, then cutting south and west across the middle of the region, you can make certain that you avoid the area in which you've been attacked 3 times. You carefully consider the 2 options. So, charge in, direct to the south. I mean, we've been stopped 3 times, but 4th time's a charm. Maybe this amulet will help. Take the longer route to the east and south. East and south. Leery of attempting yet another trek through the ravine, you decide to try and take a different route to the location described to you by Orgo. Heading fierce to the east and then cutting southwest across the edge of the dales, instead of passing straight through them, will undoubtedly make for a longer journey. Because you believe it is a path less likely to be watched or guarded by any would-be enemies. After travelling east for nearly an hour, you turn and begin moving southwest across the gently sloping landscape of fields and rolling hills, interspersed with many small but impassable evergreen thickets. You haven't gone far on the second leg of your trek when, at the edge of a deep, thickly forested gully, you make a startling discovery. 7 Otra lie in the ground, their heads touching to form a near-perfect semicircle. It's perhaps the last thing you expected to find in this remote corner of the Heart Hills. The wooden iron beings appear to be newly built. Unlike the countless other Otwok you've encountered, none of these bear even a single mar. Despite their pristine condition, the Otwok are obviously lifeless. Alright, now this is curious. I mean, if they'd been smashed up by something, I think, okay, Toratel was trying to have some Otwok stout around and find a safe route, didn't work out, but these aren't marred, so what are they doing? What are they doing? Seriously. I have no idea. Puzzled by the strange find, but realizing you can't afford to tarry here, You make a quick examination of the Oshkosh before once again setting off. You continue south into the heart of the Dales and soon come to the very place where the second and last of your grim encounters with Black Tors Undead took place. The remains of several ghouls and scattered bones of the skeletons you were able to defeat still lie scattered across a wide swath of ground at the edge of the forest. As you carefully make your way towards the looming forest, you suddenly spot a large winged figure perching on the trunk of a fallen tree. The hideous, ghoul-like creature, a pair of thick black wings protruding from its leathery, decaying torso, savagely gnaws on a long white bone. The winged ghoul has its back turned to you, so slip past unseen or attack the winged ghoul. Now, we can't let something as tactically useful as a winged ghoul just wander amok. Got to deal with it now. Attack the winged ghoul. Moving swiftly and stealthily, you draw up behind the winged ghoul, attempting to strike the hideous creature before it takes notice of you. Picking a number, bonus of 49. 20 from woodmanship, 19 from agility, 10 from luck. Got to get 100 or more, or it'll see me first. Pick now. 92, failure. Without warning, the winged ghoul whips its head around and fixes you with a cruel, haunting stare. The rotting undead menace draws back its lips and snarls, revealing a jagged line of yellow fangs. The ghoul snarls and spreads its thick, leathery wings. A powerful leap thrusts the undead creature high into the air. It drops into a glide and soars down upon you, unleashing a deafening shriek that seems to assail your thoughts. You suddenly realise the ghoul is somehow attacking your mind. What, again? You've had enough things attacking my mind recently. Picking a number. Bonus of 50. 20 from mind, 20 from spirit, 10 from aura. Got to get 75 or more, or that pile of insanity can be added. Can be added to my big pile of insanity. Honestly, I've got way too much insanity. Pick now. 118, success. A strange feeling washed over you, as if your energy has been drained away. 6 of your Nether Reserve has been drained away. I mean, it's bad, but it could have been worse. The winged ghoul, its decayed lips tattooing, hanging in tatters over a set of long, yellowed fangs, shrieks savagely as it closes in for the kill. It's a winged avenging ghoul, so let us begin combat. It howls wildly as it sails you with tooth and claw. Apparently it's forgotten it can fly. A deathly chill passes through you as your undead foe drains away your life force. Well, it's kind of dumb, so maybe it's just forgot that you can, you know, drop things and stuff, but maybe it's too dumb to do that. The undead foe stuns you with a staggering blow. You've been stunned and will be unable to act during the next round of combat. There's the next round of combat. Keep bashing, bashity, bashity, bash. Wow, so much going on in this battle description. I have to scroll the battle description. I've got a special. I've got a masterful 19 MR, powerful surge and negative nervous energy for 8, and it stuns me again. But it doesn't stick. Because my body and spirit help you avoid being stunned, so I just do 7 damage. Next blow, it is slain. 138 experience, and then 128 experience to general. The enchantment of metal helped me avoid one wall of... Thank you very much. You spend several minutes checking over your equipment and recovering from the brutal fight. At last, having no desire to remain in the presence of the winged ghoul's festering corpse, you once again set off on your way. And a bit of healing too. With every sense alert for the first sign of danger, you press deeper into the Dales, hunting for any sign of the rock formation described to you by Orgro. The remainder of your trek proceeds without incident. Just when you're beginning to wonder if the dying goblin assassin told you the truth regarding the location of the hidden tunnels, you arrive at the towering stone formation described to you by Orgro. A sense of profound relief washes over you when you suddenly realise you've made it here without having encountered the hordes of undead that haunted your two previous attempts. Now, hey, don't call your success so early. I mean, you're not in the tunnels yet. After carefully surveying the surrounding forest, you cautiously approach the massive rocks. Standing at the base of the towering rock sculpture, you gaze upwards, attempting to determine just how tall it is, how you might best attempt to reach its summit. You estimate the four massive leaning boulders that make up the formation are easily 30 feet high. According to what Ulgro has told you as he lay dying in Blacktor, the entrance to the hidden tunnels, the lair that holds the key to unlocking the lower reaches of the labyrinth, is atop this stone formation. Confident that the rough, uneven surface of the widest of the boulders will lend itself easily to climbing, especially when you're naturally sticky and hoppy, you make your way over to it. Suddenly, as you draw up to the base of the towering rock formation, you're suddenly overcome by a profound sense of dread. With your pulse racing, you turn to find a vast horde of sinister, staggering figures moving through the forest as they rapidly close in around you. The vengeful dead of Blacktor, the deadly product of a curse that seemed bent on affecting your demise, have once again found you. With the massive legion of rotting ghouls and armoured skeletons closing in, their ragged attire and battered shields bearing the insignia of Blacktor, you turn and look up at the wall of rock before you, hoping you can scale it before you are overwhelmed. A clattering sound from above makes your blood run cold. Moving on all fours across the face of the boulder directly above you, its blackened claws clinging to a rock, it's a lone ghoul. The ghoul stretches wide its fang-filled mouth and unleashes a terrifying shriek as it leaps into the air and plummets straight down at you. I've got some options. Shadow magic, elementalism, fortification, telekinesis, or just get out of the way. Like with many of these choices, I shall use random.org to tell me what to do. So just a number between 1 and 5, and I shall do what it tells me. Number 4, telekinesis. It succeeded. 16 XP to telekinesis. You summon your power of telekinesis. You project a powerful blast of telekinetic energy at the leaping ghoul, striking it in the chest and sending the undead menace hurtling to the ground. The ghoul lands on its head, several yards to your right. Before the ghoul is able to return to its feet, you rush forward and dispatch the hideous creature with a single decisive blow, presumably decapitating it. Perhaps knocking the head several yards away. With the massive horde of the undead, many of them clad in the tattered armour that still bears the emblazoned insignia of Blacktor, swiftly closing in around you, you realise you have no choice but make a stand and you can somehow evade their onslaught. A quick glance at the towering rock formation behind you suggests that reaching its summit will provide your best chance of escape. As the first wave of undead rapidly draws to within melee range, you're forced to abandon your thoughts of flight and instead prepare for what promises to be a grim fight for survival. Right, heal first. As the first of the hideous undead from the pressing hall closes in, you wholly position yourself to face your fearless foes one at a time. Skeletal Avenger, one of many That's literally what it says. Many. There's so many you can't even count them. And of how many there is, you don't know how many you're going to have to fight. So begin combat. And even of how many there is, you don't know how many more will turn up while you're fighting the first lot. So just many. Begin combat. The vicious armored skeleton strikes at you with its decayed weapon. A deadly chill passes through you as the undead foe drains away your life force. Okay, I'm just gonna bash. And slain. 24 XP. You step back from the remains of your foe, immediately turn and focus to the pressing horde of undead that continue to swarm in around you. As you again ready yourself for combat, you continue to search for any possible break in the enemy lines. As another hideous creature from the undead horde moves in to attack, you draw yourself into a combat-ready stance and prepare to engage the staggering abomination. Just quick combat that. Next one. Skeletal Avenger number 3. The 24 XP. Number 4. Number 5. Number 6. Fortunately, I have Tiara's staff, which is making these a lot easier. And you have an opportunity to heal between each fight, which is very handy. 8 of many. Another 24 XP. 9 of many. 24 XP. 10 of many. I go into a battle wage. Look! I'm just trying to get to the bottom of Wackler's mad. Would you just get out of the way? I'm trying to fulfill the very purpose of your entire faith. Get out of my way. 25 XP. A sudden and unexpected lull in the undead's unrelenting assault. They're probably tripping over all the piles of undead I've got laying around. Provides you with a chance to climb up and onto the towering rock formation. You spin around and stare up at the jagged wall of stone as you hurriedly concoct a plan of action. So I've got several options. Telekinesis, elementalism, gating, shadow magic, or just climb up there. Now, I know what happens if you use elementalism because I made a video about that. So it's definitely not that. So I'm skipping 2, so it's 1-4 for random.org. Number 4, attempt to scale the jagged rock face. Seeking every possible nook with your hands and feet, you hurriedly attempt to scale the steep side of the towering rock formation, picking a number, bonus of 59, 20 from thievery, 19 from agility, 10 from might, 10 from body, going to get 75 or more, or something bad will happen. Pick now. 127. Success. In a remarkable display of skill and agility, you rapidly spring up the face of the stone formation and haul yourself onto its summit. Having safely reached the top of the rock formation and momentarily escaped the pressing tide of undead in the forest below, you promptly turn your attention to finding the entrance to the hidden tunnels. In almost the exact centre of the rock formation summit, you discover a large stone hatch. Much to relief, you manage to pull open the weighty, dome-shaped portal, revealing a stone ladder that ascends into darkness. You immediately realise you're now standing at the threshold of the hidden tunnels, the location which was revealed to you by the dying goblin assassin. Somewhere in the darkness below, you hope to find the key to unlock the passage into the lower reaches of Wackler's Labyrinth. Staring down at the forest below your towering perch, You're horrified to witness the vast number of undead swarming through the trees and moving to encircle the rocks. You estimate there must easily be 100 or more of Black Tor's wizened dead moving through the Vale. Okay, that might be a few too many. I might run out of Neville Reserve. Because I've only got 97 of it, and I probably have to use on average one per fight. I'm going to have to also use my quick stones, but even that might wear out. And of course, while I'm fighting them, more might turn up. No, I have to hope there's something turns up. I don't know, maybe those tunnels lead to another exit. Maybe once they can't see me, the undead get bored, wander off. Maybe there's some sort of thing I find in there that helps me fight them off or ward them off. Well, who knows? So I have to fight them all. Well, unless I can use some sort of skill or power to wipe out a lot of them in what with just one Neville Reserve. That might help. Like, say I summon a giant elemental to smash about 50 of them. Or I just open a huge gate below 40 of them, and then and then open the other end of that gate 500 feet in the air and go or something like that. Or I telekinetically blast one of them so hard it knocks over 7 behind it. As the first of the several pairs of wotting hands creep up over the top edge of the rock formation, you hurriedly climb down through the opening, holding the latch closed behind you. The weighty lid slams with a reverberating thud, instantly cutting off all sound and light from the forest outside as it plunges you into an eerily quiet darkness. You're standing just below the heavy stone hatch that leads up and out of these dark, musty tunnels. The stone ladder, permanently affixed to the southern wall, climbs up to the hatch. What if I climb up and open the hatch? You scale the ladder and push up against the hatch. Weighty dome refuses to budge. Probably for the best, because there's a gazillion undead there. There's probably just so many of them just piling on there that I can't even move it. Unnerved to think you may be trapped in these lonely, lightless tunnels, you cheerlessly descend back into the passage. Look, I just have to hope something turns up. Because usually, well, often when I've been trapped in a dungeon, something has turned up. So really, the only option I have is to finish this dungeon. But we're now well over an hour, so that will have to wait until the next episode, where we solve whatever thing goes on in this dungeon, get the key to deeper into the mad, and figure out how to get out of this mess. But until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.